I know we didn't really have a plan, but I have an idea. I'm just going to ask you a question. All right. A question. You ready?
Yeah.
You ready
yeah.
for this?
Yeah, okay. Sure. Let's go.
What is the greatest movie ever made? What do you got?
Godfather.
Godfather? Is yeah. Are you serious? Or are you yeah. being? Are you just saying that?
No, no.
Godfather. Why is the Godfather the greatest movie ever?
Because made? Theatrically, the way like it's just made and like the story, how immersive it is, like it's just it's fantastic.
How old were you when you finally saw the Godfather for the first time?
I think I was when I finally saw it and understood it. I was yeah. probably like 14.
Yeah, I was about 14 as well. I had a. I was crazy about M. Night Shyamalan during like that time because he had done like he was on fire and he had put in an article where he was talking about his favorite movies of all time. And he said The Godfather, greatest movie ever made. No question. And I was like, I had heard about it. My brothers had watched it before, but I was too young to understand it. So one day I said, hey, Dad, rent me The Godfather. And he did. And I just remember watching and just going, what? Like what really is it really this great? You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things where you hear about it. And then when you finally watch it yourself, you're just like, no way. Like, was that your experience?
My first experience, like I remember as a kid, you know, seeing my parents watch it or my uncles. And like, I remember catching bits and pieces of it because, you know, as a kid, you're running around, you're not really paying attention to anything.
Same.
And so you catch bits and pieces of it. And then I remember, you know, when I got older, 14, I remember going to a friend's house and he's like, well, what are you gonna do? And he's like, well, we're gonna watch a movie. And he pulls out The Godfather and I'm like, man, I can't watch this. Like it's too long.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not gonna pay attention. And I remember just sitting there and just completely immersed in the story and seeing, you know, Al Pacino for the first time, just play the role that he did.
Oh yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, like, I just fell in love with it. And even, like, to this day, like, it's one of the very few movies that I can sit through and watch in one sitting, especially the ones, like, that long.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's almost, what, 3 hours?
It's almost, yeah, the first movie's almost 3 hours, and then the second one is well over 3 hours. What's funny was I had seen, I'd seen bits and pieces of the first movie, bits and pieces of the third movie. Like, one of the images that sticks out to me is... Joey Zaza and The Godfather Part Three getting shot by Andy Garcia on the horse. Like, I remember seeing that, but I had never seen any part of the second movie. So I had no idea what the second movie was even about. But then I kept hearing people say, oh, The Godfather Part Two is better than the first Godfather. And I'm like, yeah. There's no way. The movie starts and I'm like, what? Yeah. Again, you're like, how?
But it's one of those few things, like, you know, people always say, like, you know, the sequels are always, or they're never better than the original movie. And
yeah.
Like, you can honestly say that there's arguments that can be made that the top three movies of all time is Godfather 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
Like, it's you can even reverse the orders. Like, you can argue that the second movie is better than the first, the third movie is better than the first yeah. two, vice versa. Like, you can argue, anyone that's a movie buff and loves movies can argue those points.
But then I also, some people who will say that Godfather Part 3 shouldn't even be a part of the trilogy.
Yeah, that's true yeah. too. That's true too.
Yeah. I sometimes catch myself watching the third one just to see the conclusion, to see how it all ends, you know. Yeah. And I haven't seen the new cut that he did.
Yeah, I haven't either. I'm kind of waiting.
I really want to watch. We'll watch it.
Yeah, I really want to see what's different about yeah. it. And I kind of want to do, I don't know, maybe like the side by side, like have two screens going, have the original cut
yeah.
and then have this cut going and well, see what the differences are.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I know how the beginning of the movie was supposed to be, because if you watch the making of it, they did show you what the beginning of the movie was supposed to be. And then apparently he finally got to do his opening for The Godfather Part Three. But anyways, but yeah, The Godfather, greatest movie. And in my opinion as well, it's yeah. it's one of the greatest movies ever made. In some years I'm like, Godfather Part Two is better. And then other years I'm like, no, the first Godfather is the best. And it's just, it all, I don't know. The performances by Brando Pacino and even De Niro in the second movie was just phenomenal.
That infamous line, I thought I was out, but they pulled me back in. Like, that line, Pacino, that sticks out in my head so much, man. And, you know, I always go back and I'm like, yeah, it's not the greatest movie of all time. No, this one is. No, this one. And then I start comparing them to The Godfather. I'm like, no, man. Godfather is like the greatest movie.
Godfather is one of the greatest movies
ever. And to think that Coppola really didn't want to do it.
Yeah. Ironically enough, researching Star Wars, I find out that Coppola was like, should I do it? And George Lucas was like, yeah,
like we need money.
So you need to do this movie. And in the process, he makes a masterpiece.
A masterpiece. Yeah. I mean, this is literally, other than Citizen Kane, this is one of the must-see movies of all time.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. Casablanca, Citizen Kane, and The Godfather are like the best, biggest movies you have to watch.
And you can flip-flop the three. I think Casablanca is a masterpiece in its own right.
Oh,
just because what it meant to the time. And I mean, just a classic movie. Citizen Kane was just something different. Like a movie has never been made that way.
You know, I watched Citizen Kane when I was in high school. My teacher had done like this whole, we're going to watch the top 100 movies. We only watched three of them, but we watched Citizen Kane, and I was amazed at how modern the movie is. Like to this day, the techniques, I mean, obviously people are using those techniques, but imagining watching it for the first time and not seeing how movies were made then and how this movie made it. It was like, what? Like, how did he, how is he? But there's a whole argument, and we'll get into it one of these days, about how, was it really Orson Welles, or was it just everyone around him was really good at their jobs? You know, I've heard that I think Fincher himself has said, like, you know, the movie's amazing, but, you know, Orson Welles never would have been good if he didn't have like this person, all these other pieces in play.
And, yeah. But I think that like that was kind of almost the like golden era of filmmaking. You had like really good writers just immersed into the films, because it was really the main thing going on. Which brings me to a question.
Okay. What's your question?
What is your favorite era of filmmaking?
Jeez. I mean, all right, so maybe I'm not that good of a cinephile, because I'm like, I don't know much about the early days. I mean, everyone knows the golden age, the golden era of filmmaking was just, it was huge. And like you said, everybody was like involved. Like all the studios would be like, what movie's being made? Get everyone you can to work on this movie. Get everyone you can to work on this movie.
Pull that writer.
Yeah, pull that writer. Get that writer over here. So the golden age is really fun to research. I have a buddy of mine in college. She knew all about every actor and like what was going on, how the studios would tell you, like, this is who you're going to the Oscars with, like, this is what you're going to wear, and it, like, this is the time you're showing up, and that we're gonna have the press there. Like, and the studios were in charge of everything, so that one always fascinates me. But as for, geez, are you asking like
what is quality? What is your favorite era of film?
In
your opinion, like if you were to say, you know what, if you were stuck in a room and you can watch films from one specific era.
Oh my gosh.
What films would it be?
Man. Do you have an answer?
I do.
Oh, okay. Wow. Good for you.
I have an answer. It came to me like that.
Well, it used to be the 70s was like was the thing, because you had The Godfather, you know, Taxi Driver, Jaws, and Star Wars.
Yeah.
All in the same decade, which is insane to think about, that all these movies were made in the 70s. And but then you get to the 80s and you have the action adventure science fiction insane movies that they had no business making in the 80s, but they were like, we're gonna do it, man. And in the 90s you get this more gritty feeling of movies, you know, and it starts to expand. Then you get to the early 2000s and then you hit just the grand scale of movies now, like Lord of the Rings, you know, Avatar, The Dark Knight. And even now in this era, if you may, decade, now we're seeing like the movies are just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I'm going to have to say probably the early, the 2000 to 2010, that era was just powerful for me.
And what would be the first movie?
Probably The Dark Knight.
Nice.
2008's The Dark Knight was just a masterpiece.
Nice. If I was sticking with that era, it would be Avatar and then The Dark Knight.
Yeah, Avatar's up there, but The Dark Knight was one of those that I was like, oh my God, no way.
Yeah, you know? Christopher Nolan did an amazing job.
Oh, yeah.
That movie for me was like, you know, you grew up watching, you know, the Batman movies.
You saw Val Kilmer, George Clooney.
Just so many different, just cheesy Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh my
God. So many cheesy Batman movies. And then you're like, oh, okay, another Batman movie. Thinking it's going to be cheesy. And you walk in and it is just like Oh my God.
Like, I will say this though, the pacing of Batman Begins is far superior to the pacing of The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight has great performances. The Dark Knight has a great set piece and it's huge. But how Batman Begins is told.
I love Batman
Begins. You're like, oh my gosh.
I thought Batman Begins was probably like Batman Begins was like setting the bar. And then I was like, how are they going to beat Batman Begins? Because I loved, you know, the whole origin story of Bruce Wayne turning into Batman. You know, Ra's al Ghul, and I love that storyline.
Yeah.
And then Dark Knight comes out. Now, is Dark Knight great because of what Christopher Nolan did with Christian Bale, or is it great because of the Joker?
You're asking me right now?
I'm asking you right now.
Okay.
Is it great because of the performance of
Heath Ledger?
I'm in a mind blank right now.
I think part of it is it was Heath Ledger's masterful performance as the Joker, because it was one of those things that could have easily just kind of been like, it's another superhero villain, it's another Joker, okay. But Heath Ledger just took it to a whole other level that nobody was anticipating. And I think that in order to match Batman Begins, you needed that villain, you needed that extra oomph, which I think Heath Ledger just nailed.
You know, it's crazy to think that, you know, Nolan actually made that part specifically for Heath Ledger. He didn't want anybody to audition for it. He's like, Heath, this is for you. Yes. If you don't want it, I'll have someone else come in, but I want you to play this. And like, Heath Ledger took it super seriously. He locked himself into a room, and the only people allowed into the hotel room, I believe, was one of the writers, the costume designer, and I think Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
And it was just him trying to get into the character and understand the mindset he needed to be in for that role. And I believe he designed the face makeup.
Yeah.
He did it, and he's like, this is the way I want it every time. But he would do the smile himself.
Yes. Yeah, he would he would look at the script and say, what's going on this day? Oh, it's this. Okay. So he would draw the smile to be how he wanted it to be. And one thing that he did, which wasn't in the script, but I was like, that's the most brilliant thing, was he asked Nolan if he could put the white makeup on his fingers, the white and black makeup, to look as if he had just done it himself before he comes out. I was like, dude. So I would say the early 2000s, plus you got all Lord of the Rings happened during that time, you know, your Batman Begins, your first Iron Man, The Curious Case, Benjamin Button, you know, even 2007, two of the best movies ever, There'll Be Blood and No Country for Old Men, came out that year. So it's all of these amazing movies. And for me, the early 2000s was when I was really, really getting into movies. So I was just taking it all in. So that's my decade, which might be controversial.
But just another quick praise for Heath Ledger and his performance.
And
even that movie. I mean, just, you know, that scene where he comes in to the penthouse and Bruce Wayne is throwing the party for Harvey Dent. And he walks in, actually Michael Caine playing Alfred had a line. But that was the first time that Michael Caine actually saw Heath Ledger in makeup, full costume, and actually performing as the Joker.
Yeah.
And completely just mind blanked and was like, what is going on?
Yeah. If you watch that part, you could see him back up like, whoa.
And Christopher Nolan's like, oh, yeah, we're keeping that.
That's staying in the movie. Okay. I will clear this up, though, that everyone says that Heath Ledger ad-libbed the explosion, the hospital, like that the bomb didn't go off and that he like stood there and purposely did all that. Well, that's not the actual case. Like, he knew when the bomb was going to go off, because if you work on a movie and you have explosions, cameras, actors, if you yell action and the bomb doesn't go off, you yell cut immediately, because that means something's wrong and you want to make sure everyone's safe. So he knew exactly, and Nolan will say it in the making of it, like he walked out, he stopped, he ad-libbed looking back like this, but he knew how much
he's throwing his hands up.
He threw my hands up. You can see me right now. They said after they were done with the shot, Christopher Nolan was like, I can't believe he did not turn around as he's walking away because they said stuff was hitting him in his hair, and like he had pieces of the building in his hair, but he just kept walking. Didn't even, I was like,
the part that gets me is not even that. Which part? The part that cracks me up. I'm like, oh my God, this is so great. So he goes in and talks to Harvey Dent in the hospital, gives him the gun, and Harvey Dent doesn't shoot him, but he comes out and he just looks and gets the hand sanitizer.
Oh yeah. I'm just dying. What's his name? What's that actor's name? The one who played Gamble. He's also Spawn in the movie Spawn. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Is it Michael J. White? Or
I think it's Michael J. White.
He said that on the set, he was like, that's just him having fun. Like, they yelled action. He just looked over and he was like, and that's one thing he said about that performance was that everybody was like, oh my God, he was so like the immersed. Role immersed him. And he says, yeah, but when they yelled cut, he would just be like, yeah, so anyways, and they're like,
just completely go out of
it. And they were like, with that part when he does the why so serious to the actor when he has the knife in his mouth, and when they yelled cut, he was like, how did that sound? And he's like, I thought it was great. He liked it low. He goes, yeah. And he's looking at like, why are you asking me? He goes, well, I just want to know how it. He's like, yeah, it was awesome. Like, do it, keep doing that, you know. But yeah, that movie just sticks out to me. So that's why, yeah, that early 2000s. What was your decade?
I would go with the 80s.
I knew you were going to go with the 80s. I
love 80s movies like there's no tomorrow. And I remember coming in and actually getting into movies. And then my dad was like, okay, cool. Just wait. Like, I'm going to start showing you like the stuff that I grew up watching.
Yeah.
That I watched. And, you know, stuff like Breakfast Club and Rambo and Rocky, Goonies.
Yeah. You had all the, you had almost the all the Back to the Futures.
All the Back to the Futures. You had freaking, almost all the Rambos and then almost all the Rockies. You had Breakfast Club, all the John Hughes stuff, Weird Science, Inner Space, like just, you know, planes, trains, and automobiles, freaking Uncle Buck.
Uncle Buck, dude. That's a classic, man. Like, I love
just Uncle like Buck. So many movies. And it's just in that era, like everything was just very playful. It wasn't very serious. Everything was just like, oh, yeah, everything's a joke. Trading places.
I always laugh at the 80s because
Eddie Murphy, like just at his prime.
Yeah. Trading Places and Coming to America were like.
I think Beverly Hills Cop, too. No, that was 90s.
No, Beverly Hills Cop came out in the 80s.
The first one.
Yeah,
the first one.
I just know the 80s, like I said earlier, the 80s was that era where they were making movies that they had no business making. Movies that stick out to me, like Tron.
Yeah.
And like how did y'all even how did you do that? Like, there's no way. Like, even today's technology, they're still probably going like, I don't know how y'all did that. And then you even go back and watch like The Empire Strikes Back, which came out in the 80s, and then Return of the Jedi in 83. And you're like, dudes, what were y'all thinking? Like, how did you, like, when they were set out to, like, we're gonna succeed. Like, no, yeah. Man, it was impossible. But they found ways to do stuff in the 80s that just blow me away.
Yeah, I love the 80s. And I would, you have freaking Weird Science, like in Breakfast Club. But the way the movies were scored and like the music music, like, it's just so epic, man. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I love the 80s.
I watched 16 Candles with my wife the other day.
Pretty in Pink.
Pretty in Pink is a great one. That's a sleeper. Like, nobody really pays attention to
Pink. It really isn't. And to think that, you know, that could have been a huge role for Robert Downey Jr.
But right?
It could have been a huge role with the damn studio.
And then the ending, like, that was what. Molly Ringwald and John Hughes never worked together after that because of that ending. Because how he switched it.
One of my favorite movies, Top Gun. Come on. Top Gun.
But you forgot something big in the 80s, man. You forgot Indiana Jones, man.
Mm-hmm.
Indiana Jones, two of those movies came out in the 80s. And you had Alien. You had Aliens.
The Predator.
It's insane the movies that came out in the 80s. And even Batman came out in the 80s mm-hmm. with Michael Keaton. Beetlejuice came out in the 80s, you know?
Yeah. So many different movies, like, and again, just there were serious movies, but then they were just very playful at the same time.
Oh yeah,
the acting was, everybody was having fun. The way it was scored, each movie was scored like just epic soundtracks.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean. And then John Williams with Star Wars, Empire, and Return of the Jedi, and it's just like, oh my God.
Oh yeah, yeah. The 80s. That was my second choice was the 80s, but. Because, like I said, the 80s was just a crazy time for cinema. And that pushed everything forward to the 90s, you know. And
90s, everything just got more grittier.
Yeah.
But I love the way watching an 80s film makes you feel.
Oh, like, yeah.
You know, you sit down, you watch The Breakfast Club, you see the ending scene where he throws his fist up in the air and then you hear the music playing. You're just, you can't help but, you can't help but feel good.
Every time I hear that song, I just immediately throw my hands up in the, like, do the thing. You know what else came out in the 80s? Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yes. So, amazing movie.
So I recently got on a Who Framed Roger Rabbit kick the other day. I started researching more about Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And apparently Robert Zemeckis told Variety magazine that the first there was three choices they had for Eddie Valiant. The one of the first choices was Bill Murray, and that they called him and they tried to get a hold of him, but they couldn't get a hold of Bill Murray. And so it didn't work out. And apparently Bill Murray read that article like in 2010 and like screamed because he was like, I would have done that movie in a heartbeat. And I was like, man. And then
there was another actor who actually turned down the role, right?
Eddie Murphy
turned it down.
That's
who it was. I was like, I know it's somebody.
Yeah. And they offered it to Eddie Murphy and he was like, what is this? Like, this is bullshit. You know, like, this is weird. And then he says, but then I saw the movie and I felt so dumb. It was like, oh my God. But what's funny is like, that's one of those roles that he says, I was stupid and did not do that part. But Bob Hoskins did a just phenomenal. Oh, you know who the villain was supposed to be instead of Christopher Lloyd? Tim Curry auditioned. And they were like, it's too scary.
It's like, way too scary.
It's too creepy. Like, he
turned it down.
Yeah, they were like, we got to get somebody else. And so Christopher Lloyd, even Christopher Lloyd freaked me out as a kid, man.
That stuff was crazy.
That stuff was nuts. But yeah.
And then you had like 48 Hours, Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, the Lethal Weapon movies.
Like just so many great movies that we grew up on as kids.
Yeah.
It's just, they're all feel good movies to me. Like, I know Lethal Weapon's kind of intense for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's very intense for a lot of people.
48 Hours is intense. But it's just like, oh my God, like these are great movies.
Insanely great. Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters came out in the 80s. Like,
Jesus. Ghostbusters. Groundhog's Day.
Groundhog's. I think that was early 90s. I think early you 90s. Barely.
Just missed it.
Just missed it. But not okay. 80s. 80s is good. I like that. Okay. All right. So I'm an early 2000s. You're an 80s guy. So okay. All right. So here's my next question for you.
Go ahead.
And this one's pretty big. I should have actually warned you about this so you could have done some research.
All right.
What's better, digital or film?
Ooh. Like I said, I would say. Oh, man, you're stumping me with this one.
Yeah, you're welcome. Because I feel like people listen to this, they kind of understand where we're coming from here.
I'm going to say digital.
You're a digital guy.
I'm a digital guy. Okay. Only because like I love the way that technology has gone forward.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. I love film. 35mm film is just amazing. I love the way, just the imperfections of film and how it is.
Yeah.
And that look and sound and feel that you get whenever you watch a film movie. But digital movie, like, you know, growing up in the era we're both in our 30s.
Yeah.
We grew up pre-internet, pre-cell phone, pre-flat screen TV, pre-laptop, But we were able to see the growth of technology and the huge jump and leap that movies were able to make into digital and the possibilities and stories that have been told because of digital filmmaking. And so I think digital to me is probably, for me, it's better. And that's just my personal opinion.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just curious.
Yeah. What about you?
I'm both, but yeah. I will say, I often, you know, sometimes I'm a purist and I'll be like, no, 35mm is the way, like that's the picture. And I remember I know it's not 35, I think it's 70mm for IMAX. When I saw, The Dark Knight Rises, I saw that in like an IMAX screen, at an actual legit IMAX, theater, because now it's all digital, but this was like what, like before they switched over to all digital IMAX, like this was an actual, like they had the film reel.
You can hear it.
And when I saw the Dark Knight Rises, I just remember the picture quality was like the most pristine, clear picture I'd ever seen, like it, even clearer than digital, like the what he captured with that IMAX camera. And even with Dunkirk, it was like, oh my gosh, like how did you? So I could see how that works, but then at the same time, I'm looking at digital and the way things are going forward. And George Lucas is like, you got to keep going. Like,
yeah, you got to keep moving.
You got to keep going forward. And I like that George Lucas is in his 70s and he's over here just like pushing the boundaries of what you can do with movies. Because I remember he had the idea to edit on a computer and everybody was like, that's not possible. And he goes, just wait. And they did. Like, they figured out a way to edit on a computer. And he says, well, you know, when you keep doing shots like this for, I think it was Star Wars, the Phantom Menace, he was just like, I want a faster way to do this. And what does he do? He creates a digital camera and he shoots all of Attack of the Clones with this. It was huge at the time. It was like probably the size of this table. This camera was huge. And he shoots all of Attack of the Clones on a digital camera. And he says, you take that out, stick it into a computer, and you can start editing right away.
That's
and,
amazing.
And like that. And now that's the norm. Like us making movies, you know, you just put a little SD card in a camera, take it up on your computer, and you can start editing right away. That was not possible. But with the digital technology now is making it easier for everybody to make movies.
Yeah, and I remember I think it was Robert Rodriguez who said, yeah, once George Lucas said digital's the way, he went straight to digital. Yeah. Like it was, you know, the influence of the digital filmmaking and the way it just leaped movies forward is insane. And you saw what happened with James Cameron and Avatar and what he was able to do. It just completely changed the game.
The face
of filmmaking. And what he's going to be releasing on Avatar 2 might be something completely new for film.
Yeah, I am really surprised that he after, and we were talking about this yesterday actually. It was like, man, what's he gonna do now? Like, what's his technology he's creating for this thing?
He changed filmmaking with the first Avatar.
Yeah.
You know, with, I mean, using the digital technology and the technology he used for the movie itself, like what's next? Like, how is he going to change it? Or is it going to be even better than what he did before? Like, I don't know.
I remember it blew my mind whenever he said while he was making the first Avatar was that he could put the 3D glasses on and watch it in 3D and that he could look into his monitor and he could actually see them as the Na'vi. I mean, mind you, not fully rendered, but he could see them walking through the, I was like, how do you come up with that technology? Like, how does that even work?
Yeah. Like, how do you even just think of that?
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy to me, the techniques that these filmmakers are doing and just revolutionizing filmmaking in general.
But film, ironically, is the one way to preserve your movie.
Yeah.
So you make this movie on digital, but then you have to convert it to film if you want to keep it forever and ever and ever.
It's a good relationship.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have to have that nice balance.
Yes.
And, you know, you see movies, you know, like we saw Make on Netflix. Like,
yeah,
it has that film feel. We know it's digital.
Yeah. It's 8K, I think he shot it in.
But it has the feel of a 35mm film.
Like, yeah,
it has that, it has those, you know, those pops in the film that you see on screen whenever it's rolling. Like, it has those imperfections like built into it.
Yeah,
and the way he did it is just insane.
Yeah, you give that technology to a director who knows what he's doing, like Fincher. Yeah. He will do his best. Like, when the whole 3D, I know it's died out now, but when the 3D thing was huge back in the early 20-teens,
yeah,
if you may, I remember
2000s.
I remember I saw Hugo, directed by Martin Scorsese, and I saw that in 3D, and I was like, "Oh, that's the best use of 3D I've ever seen." You know, you give that technology to a legend like Scorsese, he's gonna do it exactly how it should be done. But then you give it to other people, you're like,
"Yeah,
you just have fun with it." All right,
my question.
What's your question?
This is gonna get really personal.
Oh boy,
it's gonna be personal for me and for you.
Oh boy, here we go.
Okay, here we go. I should have warned you about this one.
Fair enough.
So, I know for a fact that you don't watch scary movies.
I do not watch scary movies.
Neither do I.
Okay.
So, what movie puts you off from scary movies? What scared you so much as a child that you're just like, you know what? I'm done.
You know, it's not even a movie. It was the TV special of It.
Oh, my God.
With Tim Curry as Pennywise. That freaked me out when I was a kid. I was 5 years old when I watched it.
Oh, and my God, that would freak me out.
I was devastated.
I can't.
Why?
Because I just can't. I
mean, just, even now, you're like, ugh, don't talk about that. Yeah, my mother had decorated my room with a circus theme.
Oh, my God.
So I had clowns all over my room. I watch It, and I'm like, take it all down right now. Like, I can't. Yeah. So ever since I saw It, and then I hate jump scares. I hate jump scares so much. I don't like feeling that way. Like, I don't like being like what's going to happen? I can't do it. I can't. Like, if I watch a scary movie today, I will turn it, like, I will mute it and put on the subtitles and watch the story like that. Trust me, it's a lot less scary if you do that. But
I watch mine during the day.
Yeah, no, I remember my subtitles. This girl I dated a while back, she was like, "You want to watch The Exorcist?" I was like, "Not really." She's like, "Come on, let's." I was like, "All right, it's a classic. It's
supposed to be one of the greatest movies
ever." Yeah, like, and so I'm watching it.
Scariest movies, at least.
And yeah, we muted it, put it down low, and it's a great movie. It's a fantastic movie. But it was like, I couldn't watch that at night in my bed. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, what about you? What movie did it for you?
So I remember watching the sci-fi horror film Event Horizon as a kid.
And oh my gosh.
Yeah. Like,
okay. I never saw that one, but I remember seeing images and that freaked me out.
Yeah. And I wasn't supposed to be watching it, but no, I was sleeping. I'm doing air quotes. I was sleeping on the couch while my dad was watching it, and I was like secretly watching it, and it scared the bejesus out of me.
You were like 8 or 9, yeah, right?
Yeah. Scared the bejesus out of me. Like, I had nightmares for like 3 days because of that one movie. And then I remember going to my uncle's house, and my uncle lived out in the country, and there was these huge cornfields out surrounding his house. And I remember we watched Stephen King's Children of the Corn. And like, I was scared to go outside for like a week.
I can imagine.
And like, it was insane, like ruined my entire trip at my uncle's house. But it's not so much, it's the movies themselves, the stories, because some of it's like real. Like, to me, like, I'm like, that stuff can happen. Like,
yeah.
That can really happen. Like, yeah. Like, no. They released one recently called Ouija. I was like, no, we're not even watching the preview. And it's just insane. And then the way these movies are scored, like, you know, the intensity of the music just kind of builds up with the moment. And you're just like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Oh my God, oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And you know something bad's going to happen when the music just stops and it's quiet. You're like, oh, something's going to. And then that's when you look away from the screen, you know. I remember I saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the remake more than a few years ago. I was still in high school. That movie freaked me out when I watched it. And I remember my buddies were like, it's based on a true story. And I was just terrified the whole time. But, yeah, based on true story, scary movies I don't do scary movies. Like the whole Conjuring series, everybody's like, oh, I love that. I'm like, I haven't even watched one of those movies. Dude, I'm going to go my whole life not watching one of those movies.
I got tricked into watching a scary movie, and I was stuck in the movie theater.
Which movie was it?
So a buddy of mine was like, and I'm a huge Anthony Hopkins fan. I love Anthony Hopkins, and I'll watch Silence of the Lambs all day. It's not that movie, like that type of movie.
Yeah, that's not a scary movie.
That's like an intense drama
movie. Yeah, psychological drama.
You know? Yeah. But he's like, hey, we're going to go watch some movie, Anthony Hopkins in it. And like, I hadn't seen, you know, okay, cool. Yeah, let's go. You know, I wanted to get out of the barracks or whatever. And, we go, and it's The Rite.
Okay.
With Anthony Hopkins, and it's pretty much like a exorcism style movie. And I'm just like, this is no, I can't watch this. Like, I was literally sitting my eyes closed
in the movie. Oh my gosh. Like, yeah, that was me when I watched The Woman in Black. Like, I was like, I cannot. And like most scary movies I'll watch, like if I ever watch a scary movie, I will never ever watch it again. I never want to watch something like that ever again. So yeah, I am not a scary movie guy. Give me a good drama.
Yeah,
and I'm there all day to watch it.
But a psychological drama, you know, something that's intense, I'll watch that all day. But like, if it's a scary movie, like, I'm not watching it.
Yeah,
I have a hard time sleeping as it is. I don't need more things to keep me up at night. Like,
I don't need that image in my head.
Yeah, like I don't need that. Like, even no, I'm good.
I remember I went to go see Sinister, the one with Ethan Hawke, we went to go see it in Austin, and I remember the manager before the movie started said, hey, we have a surprise for you. And we're like, okay. So the movie goes, it's over. And he goes, all right, just so you know, we have the writer here, the screenwriter. And he came out. And we're like, what? Okay. And he talked to us. And he goes, anybody have any questions? And somebody raised his hand. He goes, what are you doing here, man? Because it was like a Thursday night at 10 o'clock. I was like, what are you? And he was like, oh, I live down the road. So anyways. But yeah, that movie was creepy. And I never watched it again. Like, even though I kind of enjoyed it, I was like, I'm never going to watch it again. I can't do it. Yeah. I can't. I'm a wuss when it comes to scary movies.
I remember watching Child's Play as a kid, too.
Oh, jeez.
And Child's Play isn't scary. Like, it's not a scary movie.
Yeah.
It's just...
But you were young,
though. It's just creepy.
Yeah.
And it just so happens, when Child's Play came out, guess what was a big hit? Dolls that look like Chucky.
Yes.
And my brother had one, and he used to terrorize me by putting it in places like in the closet, like with the door cracked, with it just looking at me. Like, I'm like, how did you do that? Did you lay in my bed and look what the perfect angle was?
The perfect angle would be like, for you to put that. That's terrifying. Like,
I'm a little impressed with the with how detailed you are with this, but at the same time, it's kind of a dick move.
I heard a comedian, it was like Dan Cummins, he said, like, when he saw Poltergeist, they had a doll in the movie that, like, comes alive. He goes, that wasn't some doll they made for the movie. That was a doll they bought at Walmart, which I had, too. He's like, so I watch the movie, and I look over at my doll, and I'm like, I don't know. He said, so I throw it away, and I don't want anything to do with it. He goes, my mother was taking out the trash. She goes, oh, Dan accidentally threw this away. And what does she do? She puts it back in the same spot. I come home from school, and there it is in the corner of the room. So, I'm not a scary movie. Like, Signs, I know a lot of people don't like Shyamalan anymore, but Signs creeped me out, but I loved it.
Yeah.
So that's a good movie. I like Signs a lot. So.
And there's some of them, like, that I'll do because they're not, like, crazy scary, but some of the ones that are designed to be scary, like, no. Like, I still haven't watched the new It movies, and I know that there's some great performances in those movies, but I know I'm good.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fine. I will talk to people who have watched it and get their opinions and then form an opinion off of that.
Fair enough.
All right, your turn.
All right. Are you a big visual effects guy, or are you kind of like minimal is good, or do you like a big movie with a lot of visual effects?
Minimal is good. Like, I like visual effects just like everybody else, but I'm more of a character development kind of a guy. Like, I want to see, you know, great performances. I want to see great screenwriting. I want to feel for the characters in the movie. Like, if I can come away and actually have feelings for the antagonist and the protagonist, and, like, you know, kind of go that journey with them throughout the movie, and, like, you know, kind of feel for them.
Yeah.
Then the writers and the directors did a fantastic job. Like, that's that's more me. Like, don't get me wrong, I love a great visual effect, and I can tell when it's like, oh, that was kind of cheaply made.
Okay.
But at the same time, like, that doesn't make or break a movie for me.
All right. Like, okay.
What about you?
The spectacle, like, mm-hmm. I enjoy watching, but I also like when visual effects enhance the story as opposed to just being like, hey, it's a visual effect, look at this, it's pretty cool. Like, I get so sick and tired of watching I love the Avengers movies. I think I love the storytelling. It's a modern day myth, you know. I love all of these movies, but I hate that they digitally create the costumes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just make a costume.
Like, it's the smallest details. Like, you know, we know the wind's blowing, but the cape's not moving. Like,
yeah.
Or there's no wind, but yet the cape is, like, billowing in the air. Like, why?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I got so mad when I saw the behind the scenes of Black Panther, and I was like, man, he was wearing the Black Panther suit, and he looked great in the Black Panther suit. But then they had to go through and put a digital suit over it. For no reason. And you're
no reason at all.
It's like, so that stuff makes me mad. Okay, so let me ask you this question. What movie or movies have some of the best visual effects you've ever seen?
First one that comes to mind is Avatar.
Avatar, okay.
I would say, man, it's hard. Avatar. You go next.
For me, the first thing that pops into my head is Jurassic Park.
Oh my god, yes.
Like, to this day, I mean, some of them are getting a little dated, unfortunately. Like, the Brachiosaurus doesn't look as... But man, I remember when I first saw the Brachiosaurus when I was a kid, I was like, that's a dinosaur. And then Sam Neill says, that's a dinosaur. And then the T-Rex is just...
insane.
Looks amazing to this day.
Independence Day?
Yeah, they had some pretty good stuff.
Like when they blow up the Empire State Building in New York, I'm like, oh, that's amazing.
Did you ever hear how they did the shot of the fire going through the city?
No.
They built the set, and they invert, like, they put it facing down, they put the camera facing up, and they shot the flame through to make it look like it's going through, because they said it fired faster going down as it did going sideways.
That's awesome.
And then you get the film, you get the footage, and you put the camera the right way, it looks like it's going through the streets. Awesome. And I was like, that's impressive. Yeah. But yeah, Independence Day had some good shots in that movie. They still hold up to this day.
Yeah, they really do. And you know, there's so many movies out there with great visual effects, and there's so many out there with like bad
visual effects.
And you're just like, why? I don't know.
Yeah, some of these movies I watch and I'm like, really? Did you think that? Like, you saw John Wick, right?
Yeah.
They did, the dog went to the bathroom and it was a digital, you know, piece of
crap.
It's like, why?
I feel like sometimes they do it just to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I have a feeling some guy was so excited to go into work that day.
I'm just creating dog peeing.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that was his job, was to do that shot. But then some of those effects, like Lord of the Rings, yeah, those effects will be outdated, but some of those effects are never going to be outdated in Lord of the Rings. You know, that stuff's going to be always impressive.
Yeah, and it's crazy how, again, you can, if you start watching the movies from the 80s to the 90s, 2000s and on, like how the visual effects kind of update themselves and how some of the techniques are still being used. Like it's crazy to me that like some visual effects make and break movies.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, you go The Abyss.
Yeah.
James Cameron's The Abyss. And he has that pseudopod head comes out and completely digital, and you go from that to the T-1000 and Terminator, which was like, what, how did you? And then from there it was like, now Jurassic Park is possible. And once Jurassic Park hit, everybody was like, oh my gosh, we could do visual, you could do anything with
amazing
visual effects.
Yeah, like I don't know. All right, my turn.
What you got?
Okay, so we talk about movies all the time.
Yes.
Who is your favorite character?
What?
Who is your favorite movie character across all genres?
Oh, geez.
A character that you feel for, that you like, oh my god, like this is my dude, like, you know what I mean?
Oh my gosh, dude, why did you have to do this one? You should have given me a heads up on that one, because
well, you didn't give me a heads up on digital or films.
Yeah, you're welcome. Geez, like a character who's like, that's my dude, I'm gonna want that guy to succeed and everything. Man, that is a huge question, dude. Who's yours?
Rocky.
Rocky. Okay.
Rocky. I remember watching the first Rocky movie and just completely falling in love with that character.
So perfect.
And just
so perfect.
And just feeling, and then just watching him lose that first movie, like he lost the fight, but then he won, like internally, like won that internal battle.
Yeah, that's like one of the best.
Being just kicked down this whole life and then actually going and fighting on a huge stage and holding his own against one of the best fighters in the world in Apollo Creed. Like I felt for that character. And then every movie, since that first movie, I've been addicted to every movie that features Rocky. And like that's my guy. Like
that's your guy.
That's my dude.
That's solid, dude. That's solid.
That's my dude. Like I'm probably gonna order a poster of Rocky just chilling.
Did you ever hear the story about the behind the scenes where they painted the big old mural of him and Apollo Creed, and they hang it up there in the boxing ring match? Well, he gets there and he looks up and he goes, "The shorts are a different color." They're like, "I'm sorry." He goes, "That's not the color of my shorts." I'm like, "Oh, sorry." And then that's it. Apparently they had done the wrong color and it was obvious, and they're like, what are we gonna do? And they said, just call it out that they messed up. And so he says it, and that was why they put that part of the movie.
That's amazing.
But
I love the story behind like the original movie. Like Sylvester Stallone wrote that script and he believed in it so much, and he was pitching it, trying to get a studio to pick it up. But he was keen on the fact that he wanted to play the role.
Yeah.
And all the studios found, like they read it, they loved it, but none of them wanted him to play, to be in the movie.
Because he was nobody.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't nobody, but he also had, like, it was kind of hard to understand him. Like, the way he talked wasn't very good. And it's not that he had a very thick accent, but he also, like couldn't pronounce a lot of words correctly. Yeah. So like they didn't want him as the main character. And he was pretty poor. Like he sold his dog for money. At one point he was living out of his car.
Yeah.
And then finally a studio picked it up and said, yeah, you can play the main role. And they went from there, and it was a massive success. Yeah. Massive success.
It's huge.
And he actually went back and bought the dog that he sold.
And it's in the movie.
Yeah. And it's in the movie.
Yeah. Like the dog, that's his dog. Yeah. Yeah.
Butkus.
Yeah. That movie, I remember I watched it for the first time. Like, they had it on for Thanksgiving one year, and I was just like,
and it's just a feel good movie.
Yeah, man. It's one of those you get on your feet, and like you said, he loses at the end.
Yeah, and you start rooting for the guy.
But the fact that, you know, she's like, Rocky, I love you, and he's like, I love you. I was like, this is perfect. Yeah. And it makes me so upset that, you know, I still want to be a writer, but he was not even 30. Mm-hmm. And he wrote that first movie, and it's just like a perfect movie.
And then every movie after that has been great. Like, yeah. I love.
I heard Rocky 5 wasn't that great.
Rocky 5 wasn't that great. But Rocky 4, fire. Just straight fire. Like, I love.
One day I'm going to sit down and watch all of them. Because I've seen them all bits and pieces, and it's been a long time. But one day I will sit down and watch them all.
And then these new ones coming out with Creed, with Michael B. Jordan, are amazing too. Even though they follow the same kind of formula, outline of Rocky, I think they're amazing.
And apparently Michael B. Jordan's going to direct the third one. So yeah, he's actually going to follow what Sylvester Stallone did. Yeah. He's going to start making the movies himself.
Yeah, Sylvester, I think he's written mostly all of them himself.
Yeah, he wrote them all himself.
Which is amazing. He's set for life.
Yeah. Oh, but, yeah.
And I think he even said after this last one, like, that's done. That's the last where we saw Rocky Balboa, which is fine. That's the
Yeah, that's a character, yeah.
That's the send-off you wanted to see for Rocky Balboa.
I didn't see Creed 2.
Creed 2 is amazing.
Oh, man, I got to watch it. I saw Creed, and I was just blown away at how amazing that story was.
Like, and Creed 2 is just as good. It's on Hulu.
If you haven't watched it yet. I got
to
watch it.
Shout out to Hulu.
Yeah, please sponsor us, Hulu. Nah.
But, yeah. So what's your have you had time to think a little
bit? No, I was hoping you'd forget about it. We moved to the next one. Good grief, dude. Rocky's a good one, man. I'm just going through my Rolodex of all these movies I've seen, of characters I like. I was going to say Jason Bourne, but I didn't see the last one they did. But Bourne Identity, Bourne Ultimatum, and Bourne Supremacy, Bourne Ultimatum.
I love those movies, man.
Those movies are awesome. Amazing. Those movies are so cool.
Amazing movies.
And I like that character a lot. I like the whole, like, not knowing what's going on. And you're also trying to figure it out with him. But in the process, he's, like, just kicking major, you know, ass the whole time.
Dude, and you see him in Switzerland laying on the bench in the park, and the cops come get him, and the next thing you know, they're on the ground. You're just like, what just happened? Rewind.
Yeah. Was that the one where after he puts them all down, he takes the gun apart like a second? I was like, how did you?
Yeah, like,
that was so, I'm
like,
cool.
What is going on? Like,
and even he stayed there like, what did I just do? Yeah.
Yeah. And then even like even the next, like the second one, the Bourne Supremacy, when he goes into the consulate, and he's just sitting there just not saying a word, and the guy's like, oh no, you're gonna talk, and then he does something and just puts both everybody down just at once, and just holding the gun. I'm just like, oh my god.
Was that the first one too?
No, that was the second one.
That's the second one.
That was when they kill his girlfriend, and then he goes and gets caught on purpose.
Oh yeah. He's in that. In that office.
He's in the interrogation room, and like the CIA is calling the guy. Like, oh, you don't know who you got.
And then he's like, down. I got this. And then he puts
everybody down. Like, just insane.
That one was one of my favorite parts of the second one. Was it wasn't even him. It was the guy who he was going to go and interrogate. The other guy who was a part of the Black Briar. Was it Black Briar or was it Treadstone?
Treadstone.
When he goes into his house, and the guy like walks in, types in the code, walks into the kitchen, and pulls out the gun, and he goes, "It's not loaded." He goes, "It felt lighter.
It felt a little light."
And then he puts on the thing, and then he's there. He's like, "I thought you were gonna kill me." And he goes, "What did you do?" He goes, I called it in as soon as I walked in. I was like, dude, like the dude knew as soon as he walked into his house. Like he's in there humming a song and he types in the code. He already knew someone was. Yeah, yeah. I was like, how did. I don't know. That part always got me. I was like, that's so cool. But anyways.
The, one of the coolest part of the second one is when.
This is a bored podcast.
Yeah, it's a bored podcast.
It's a bored podcast.
But what the coolest thing is like. You know, when he's looking through the scope at the CIA agents building, and he's asking for a specific person, and she's like, well, I don't know if we can get her. And he goes, she's standing right next to you, and just hangs up.
Yeah, he's like, oh. That shouldn't be that difficult. She's standing right behind you, and she turns around, and he... And then the other one I like was on the second movie, or the third movie. He's like, I'm in my office, so that's impossible.
You look kind of tired.
He's like... No, that was before. But then he says, I'm in my office right now. He goes, that's impossible. Why is that? If you're in your office right now, we'd be having this conversation face to face. Click, and he hangs up. And I was like, dude. Yeah. So, yeah, Jason Bourne. I didn't see the latest one. I heard it wasn't as great. I was like, I don't want to ruin that. But
yeah, the latest one was good, but it wasn't like, you know.
It wasn't the ultimatum.
It wasn't the ultimatum. It wasn't the, you know, Bourne Identity. Bourne Supremacy was all right. Like, I liked it enough.
Yeah.
But the Ultimatum and Identity were, like, my two favorite.
Yeah, Ultimatum was trilogy. Fantastic. Yeah. So,
that should be your choice.
That's my choice. Jason Bourne. there you go. Okay, good. I'm glad we got there.
It's an amazing choice.
Thank you. Okay. Who is your favorite director?
Now we're getting to the nitty gritty.
Yeah, now we're getting to the bad stuff.
Okay, I'm going to say...
You can name a few.
I can name a few. Yeah. So I'm just going to hit up, you know, I think it's just going to be kind of typical, kind of like, okay. That's,
of course. You
know, James Cameron, Spielberg, Lucas. I mean, those three right there created like the movies of our lifetimes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can even throw Christopher Nolan in the mix but really I can only say that because he did the Dark Knight series. And yes. I truly love those movies. But I'm going to have to go with Cameron, Spielberg, and Lucas because they created my childhood.
Yes.
They created the movies I grew up with.
Okay.
And John Hughes. But
John Hughes as well is great.
Yeah.
No, I like that. It was funny. I wrote a when I was in college, I wrote a screenplay and I named this planet LCS after Lucas, Cameron, Spielberg. And that was like, it's like LCS 1947. Like that was... That was like my THX 1138. That was why I said LCS. Anyways. Mm-hmm. No, that's good. I like that a lot. That's a good answer. Me, I might have to go kind of typical, but Spielberg was the one who got me into movies. I saw Jaws, changed my whole life. I was like, that's
E.T.? Like,
yeah.
Oh, my God.
And then I really like David Fincher a lot. David Fincher's movies are just... he has, and I said it one time and nobody was like, but I said, I think Fincher is the closest to Kubrick that we have today.
Oh, wow.
And
that's a
bold statement.
That's a bold statement.
And, but hear me out though.
I like it.
Oh, thank you. Okay. I'm glad you're not like explain, because with Fincher's movies, they're so unique and the camera movement, even the technology he uses, you're just like, there's a shot in the Zodiac where the camera is following the cab and above. It's like an aerial shot looking down at the cab. And how they did it was they said the camera is stuck to the cab. So wherever the cab goes, the camera moves with the cab and to make you uncomfortable. And you're watching that effect. And of course, I watch all the behind the scenes stuff. And the visual effects guy said like that was so impossible to plan, you know, because it was crazy. But his vision for all his movies are just amazing. Mm-hmm. The Coen brothers. I love the Coen brothers. I mean, every movie they do, I'm like, how did you did you see the Ballad of Buster Scruggs?
I did.
Yeah, that was a sleeper. Like, nobody really saw the Ballad of Buster Scruggs. I kept telling people, and nobody was like, I was like, no, I didn't. I was like, dude, that was such a good movie. And Fargo is just amazing.
Yeah.
What about Tarantino?
I love Tarantino. I loved his early stuff. I mean, Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs. Reservoir Dogs is by far one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
I love Kill Bill. Everything after Kill Bill, like the screenwriting is amazing. It's the same level of screenwriting as he did for Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs. I don't really like the amount of blood that he uses, because it's kind of excessive sometimes. You're like, really, dude? You cut off a finger and you're like spouting 5 gallons of blood.
So where does the switch happen for you?
I would say the Hateful Eight.
Like, that's when it all changed?
Yeah.
So it's funny you say that, because his editor, she passed away after Inglourious Basterds. And somebody else pointed that out to me. They were like, you could tell he doesn't have the same editor he did, or like all his other movies leading up.
Yeah.
So The Hateful Eight and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood are all
different
editors. It's a different editor. Yeah. And
that makes sense.
That's funny that you were like, yeah, this is where I stopped. And it's like,
yeah. Well, it's not that I stopped. I enjoy the movies. Don't get me wrong. It's just, there's times in the movies I'm just like, that's a little excessive. Like, why do we need that much blood and stuff like that? Like, you didn't need that for your other movies. Inglourious Basterds had it, but that's because Inglourious Basterds was supposed to be that way.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be kind of that fantastical thriller
and
action movie. But you didn't need that for Reservoir Dogs. You didn't need that for Pulp Fiction. Kill Bill had it, but Kill Bill was also supposed to be that.
It was supposed to be that style. I think it was when he did Kill Bill and the success it had. I think he was kind of like, oh, that's what y'all like. I do. Okay, I'm just going to do insane violence.
But Django didn't have it. I mean, he had some of it, but it wasn't as much.
Well, Django's was very... Okay, the shootout at the end was a little bit much, but a lot of it before that was very grounded, and like, this is like, it's a horrific scene, but where you see what was his name, the guy who's getting torn up by the dogs.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Geez. Anyways, it's gonna bother me now. I'm gonna think about it tonight. I'm gonna text you like, that was his name. But when you see him getting torn up by the dogs, it's very quick shots, but it's very realistic, and that's where it kind of gets unsettling. But when you get to, you know, The Hateful Eight and even Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the violence, you're just like, oh my gosh, dude, like, really? Like, I mean, it gets to the point where you start laughing because of how outlandish it is.
And it, again, like, Tarantino, fantastic director, fantastic writer.
Yes.
And a lot of people think like, oh, he's kind of egotistical, he's very big on stuff. Well, of course he is. I mean, everybody in Hollywood who is successful is.
Yeah.
Like, they're all egotistical. They're all very confident in themselves. And you have to be in that world, in that area of Hollywood. And he has every right to be. He's written some of the best movies ever made, like Pulp Fiction. Like, Jesus, that's like the top 10.
My argument when people say he's very egotistical, I'm like, if any man could write a tavern scene as well as he did in Inglourious Basterds,
dude,
I was like, you could say whatever you want to about yourself.
Yeah, like, and it, you know, Germans do the number three, like, oh my God, like, and it's true, they do. Like, I lived in Germany, like, that's how they do
it. So it's real, It's real. Dude, but that whole sequence, my heart was pounding the entire time. And
like, they're all pointing guns underneath the table. Like, I'm just like, oh my God, everybody's going to die in here.
And what's funny about that scene is, you know it as soon as it starts.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to die. But how is it going to happen? What's going to be the catalyst that pushed us there?
I love that line. Of course, I know of Hugo Stiglitz.
Oh, yeah. God, that movie was just, that's just a great.
But it's a fantastic movie. I would, Quentin Tarantino, again, my list, I can add people to my list day in and day out, but if I had to pick three directors that I would watch their catalog, and that was my only three directors I could watch, it'd be Cameron, Spielberg,
Lucas. That's solid.
Just because, again, they made my childhood. They made the movies that I fell in love with, and I would watch them every day. Like, you know, we talk about Star Wars all the time.
Yeah, we do talk about Star Wars all the time. Hey, you know what? A Cameron movie that nobody talks about that's amazing, True Lies.
Dude.
Nobody talks about True Lies. True Lies is so great.
Dude, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Tom Arnold. I mean, apparently Tom Arnold got the part because they had a meeting with him. And after Arnold Schwarzenegger leaves, Tom Arnold looks at James Cameron and goes, I think I could take him. James Cameron was like, oh my gosh, this guy's amazing. And then the scene where he's over there like, I don't know if you remember the scene where he's looking through the papers and he pulls over really quickly. And Tom Arnold's like, is it my turn to drive? I don't know. That movie was just, That's amazing. And like, that's the one that everyone always, when they talk about James Cameron, like, oh, Titanic, Avatar, Aliens. I'm like, dude, True Lies is where it's at, man. True
like,
Lies. Just,
like, you want to test your mettle, put Arnold Schwarzenegger and Tom Arnold on screen. Again, Arnold did make a great movie with Danny DeVito too, but
yeah, he had some, speaking of that, I didn't know that when he did Twins, like, he was a little scared to do it, because he's like, I've never done comedy. Yeah. Like, he said, I want to do it, but I don't know if it's going to work. And it worked. That movie is so fantastic. Twins is great. If you haven't seen Twins, go watch Twins.
Is that you named your cat Julius?
that part always makes me laugh. He just looks at him like, yeah, I did. Like, what? Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that's a great movie. All right. Anyways, what else?
So we're about an hour in. Do you want to keep going?
I think we did pretty good.
Yeah.
So yeah, hopefully you got to know us a little bit more, a little bit better. But yeah, next week we'll be back with another fun topic. And thanks for joining us for this, the Movie Stuff Podcast, our first one. And if you want, check out the Star Wars Stuff Podcast. Rudy and I are part of that too, where we talk about all about Star Wars, and also the Marvel Stuff Podcast as well. So thank you so much, Rudy. This was fun.
Yeah, man, this is great. Thanks for joining us, guys. Again, join us next week. I promise there's going to be weeks where we talk about specific things.
Yes, today was just a broad.
Yeah, this is kind of a broad spectrum.
Get to know us.
Yeah, get to know us. We kind of get to know each other a little bit better. We've had a lot of these
conversations. But it's nice to still like kind of hear like him throwing weird questions at me, like, who's my character that I fought? I'm like, dude, that's impossible.
It's just like asking, like, what's your favorite movie?
Yeah, exactly. You're welcome.
Across all genres.
Yeah, exactly. All right, that's enough for today. I'm just kidding. Cool. But yes, thank you so much, guys, and we'll be back next week. Adios. All right.